Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
While researching the mystery of human-like non-humans encountered in the woods, I discovered the phenomenon of houses in the forest appearing and disappearing unexplainably. Apparently, it was a lot more common than I even realized. I began to compare experiences of phantom houses to films such as The Blair Witch Project. It became obvious that The Blair Witch Project was more of a folktale film after I realized just how many real-world experiences echoed the plot of the found footage horror. I began to compile the stories and tales from people spread all across the world of phantom houses. I've come to the conclusion that perhaps there are three explanations for this phenomenon that make the most sense. One is that these houses are interdimensional artifacts themselves and behave as ships in the sense that they move independently in and out of the normal reality that we experience every day, much like a vessel emerging from the fog or entering our time space. The second is that they exist alongside us in a sort of parallel time or dimension, in a pocket that we can sometimes get a glimpse of as if looking through a window into someone else's world. And the third is that they never exist at all, and are perhaps a trick or a trap, a feature of forest magic perhaps perpetrated by supernatural entities or witch work. A sorcerer's conniving to lure helpless beings deeper into the woods until they become hopelessly lost, or worse, they find themselves victim of some horrible fate like prey. Throughout my life, and not just mine, but also those close to me, a dream of a phantom cabin manifests in our minds while we sleep. In my dreams, a witch inhabits this cabin. Small structure, complete with smoking chimney and the glass pane windows, is up on a hill. It's always deep in the darkness and lit with red light. There's no mistaking its menacing intentions. And yet in my dreams, I'm drawn closer and closer. Every single time, nearly to the point of entering. Sometimes I see the witch through the blinds, lit by some luminescence from the interior. Other times she speaks to me, telling me to enter, freezing my blood. I always awaken from the dream before I ever go inside. I was about 15 or 16, and I was also with a friend of about the same age and his dad. We were in the woods behind our house. We lived in the same neighborhood. And we went back into these woods many times to hike around and play paintball. One day, we decided to go a little deeper into the woods just to check it out. This was an old growth forest, sort of a protected wetlands that are a few square miles and surrounded by roads on all four sides, located in the northeast US. For a while, we were wandering along. It was mid-late spring, so the forest was pretty lush and green, when one of us sees a small patch of white coming through the woods. It stood out pretty easily in contrast to the green leaves, so we decided to investigate, and the three of us headed off in the direction toward this mysterious white spot coming through the leaves. If you've ever walked through dense woods, you'll know it's difficult to walk in a straight line because of all the fallen logs and brush. Anyway, we keep walking towards this object for what seems like a while. I've racked my brain, but really can't recall how long. But this white object still hasn't come into focus. It still looks like just a white blot, and it's just as far away as when we first spotted it. We didn't think much of it at that point. Or at least I didn't, and just continued walking in this thing's direction. It must have happened two or three times that we'd walk towards this thing for a few minutes, stop, and notice that we still weren't getting any closer. At this point, I think there was a little tension building, but nothing too out of the ordinary. At some point, though, as we were getting closer, we noticed the object is starting to fill out. We can clearly see now that it's a tiny white house on a hill. I'd say the structure was about the size of a shed that you might keep your lawnmower in or something like that. And we were excited because how often do you come across something like that in the forest? It's still a little ways away, but again, very obvious, this little white house is what we had seen and been walking towards. So as we continue toward this little house, we lose it from sight momentarily as we go up and over another hill in front of it. But as soon as we get to the top of this hill, the small white house is gone. We're confused as hell, looking at each other, but keep walking to the hill we had previously seen this house on. This last part happened pretty quickly. We get to the top of the hill, still looking at the other hills close by to see if maybe we just got turned around or something and we'd see the little house, until one of us noticed an old foundation in the ground at the top of this hill, exactly where the house had been. The shape of the foundation was exactly the size of this mysterious vanishing white house. I barely had time to notice the foundation when all three of us heard a growling-like sound that continued to get louder and louder until it was as loud as a chainsaw. Nothing was said, but the three of us, including my friend's dad, sprinted out of the woods in the direction we came from. I don't recall ever discussing what happened with the two others I was with that day. And since this happened, I tried looking on Google Maps for some kind of indication the house was there, and we just lost it. But the forest is just too thick, and I can't see anything. About a year and a half ago, I told my brother what had happened, and we went back into those woods looking for the house, or at least the foundation. But we didn't find anything. Metsänpaito is a term in Finnish folklore which refers to the belief that the forest could hide or imprison people or domestic animals such as cows or horses so that they could not escape and would be invisible to people who went in search of them. Another term for the same phenomenon is Metsänkatko, literally the forest's secret place for hiding things. Swedes in Finland called this Skogenhallar, the forest keeps. People covered by forest were described as not being able to recognize the terrain around them, even if they were on familiar grounds. In other cases, they might have walked endlessly through unfamiliar terrain, or were rendered completely paralyzed, unable to move or to speak at all. Unnatural silence, devoid of the sounds of nature, was also common. People or animals under the influence of the phenomenon were described as becoming either completely invisible to other people or looking like part of the nature around them, like a rock. In one story, a man had been looking for a missing cow for days. When he finally gave up and returned to his work, the first tree stump he struck with his axe transformed back into his cow. The cause of Metsänpaito was sometimes credited to Mahiset, who were supernatural, small, human-like beings imagined to live underground, literally earthlings or earth dwellers, often translated as gnomes. A lost person could sometimes free oneself by reversing one's garments, turning their jacket inside out, by switching their shoes to the wrong feet, or by watching the world upside down through their own legs. This was because of the idea that everything was topsy-turvy in the lands of the Mahiset. Some were released seemingly without reason, others only after being sought after by a shaman. Some were never seen again. In the town of Beverly, Massachusetts, is a large wooded conservation area officially called Beverly Commons, but it's also been known for many years as Witch's Woods. And the story most currently told about the name is that Giles Corey supposedly hid out in these woods while trying to escape from the Salem witch trials. I'm not sure how true that story is. Giles Corey was quite elderly when he was accused of witchcraft, and it wasn't easy to get from Salem Village to Beverly back in the 1600s, but still, it's a good story. Caroline Howard King's family owned a summer home in Beverly called Thistlewood, which abutted Witch's Woods. It was right up next to it. She doesn't mention any stories about witches, but she does write about some other spooky occurrences happening in the area. According to her book, the locals believed that a headless ghost wandered through the woods, although they were reluctant to speak of him. Many had allegedly seen him walking forlornly among the trees, carrying his head under his arm. No one knew what tragedy had led him to this doom, mind you. Carolyn King and her family jokingly named him Heady, but she never did see the decapitated ghost, but had instead other odd experiences in the witch's woods. One summer morning in 1841, Caroline, who was 19 at the time, went for a little walk in Witch's Woods with her 9-year-old cousin Noni and a maid named Lucy Ann. After walking for a while, the group decided to have a snack and rest under some hemlock trees a short distance from the path. And when they were done eating, they walked back to the path. But the path was no longer there. Despite searching in all directions, no path could be seen at all. It was as if it had completely vanished. Caroline and her companions continued to wander through the woods for hours, but somehow they always ended up back at the same exact spot. They could hear the ocean, so they knew they weren't far from home, but they were completely unable to get there. Trying one last time to find the path, they stumbled upon a clearing in the woods, in the middle of which stood the remains of a long abandoned house. A chimney, a cellar hole, a stone stoop with an enormous lilac bush growing next to it. This ruin, Caroline knew, was called by her neighbors the Homestead and was alleged to be haunted. It was a shunned location. A path led from the clearing up a small hill, and the group decided to follow it. From the top of the hill, they had a view over the woods and could see nearby at the foot of the hill a cozy little farmhouse with smoke rising from the chimney. The house had a broad stone stoop, and as they watched, a woman came outside and scattered feed for the chickens. Excitedly, Lucy Ann ran down towards the house to ask for directions home. Caroline and her cousin waited and waited, and finally a dejected Lucy Ann returned. No matter how many times she had walked around the hill, she simply could not find the farmhouse. In fact, all she saw, according to her, were hateful, solemn old pine trees. However, she had found a dry stream bed, which they followed out of the woods to the beach and eventually home to Thistlewood. The writer, James Russell Lowell, was staying with the King family at the time, and he claimed that he had the second sight and had seen a ghost at Elmwood, his family's estate in Cambridge, which is now the home of the Harvard University's president. So he set off in the woods determined to find the haunted farm. But he never found either the abandoned ruin or the elusive farmhouse, which appears to have been a ghostly image of the ruin as it formerly was. So what would have happened if he or Lucy Ann actually had found the house and had asked the farm wife, if that's indeed what she was, for directions? What if they went inside for a drink of water or a bite to eat? I think they should be thankful that they never found the house, because fairy tales and ghost stories such as Hansel and Gretel suggest that they might still be inside that house today. One thing that I found quite interesting while researching this phenomenon was that in the situation where multiple people experienced phantom houses, they didn't always seem to experience them the same way. The house was almost always a shared apparition or entanglement, if you will, but sometimes the appearance would be different, or one of them would become sick, they would begin to feel ill, like they were going to throw up, they would begin to feel weak, or they would forget it soon after leaving. Here's a story that describes that forgetfulness perfectly. About 2 years ago, my close friend visited me. Me and my family had just moved about 30 minutes from my hometown, and my hometown friends were coming to visit, one by one. The town where we moved was deep in the country, and we live in Georgia. There were a few restaurants within 10 to 20 minutes from my house, so when my friend came over, we decided to go get some food.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We put the restaurant we wanted to go to into maps and we began driving. Between my house and the actual town, if you want to call it that, where all the restaurants are, there's just a few houses and a lot of land. Not a lot of anything else, really. The map takes us off of the main highway and down a dirt road. And I remember thinking, this really is a hillbilly town. This fast food place is down a gravel road. The gravel road is long and has trees on either side the whole drive. There's nothing else. And the road ends, and at the end of it is this dirt driveway. And the map is still going, but it tells us to go down this driveway. We're stupid kids and are confused, so we listen to it. We go down the driveway, and it's one of those half-circle type drives. So you don't have to back out of it. You can just go around it and end up back on the road. We pull up to a gorgeous little blue cottage with wind chimes and plants on the front porch. It's basically what I imagine a fairy would live in. And directly next to it, there was an old wooden fence with cows behind it, and then a beautiful pasture. The fence was so close to the driveway, like you could reach your hand out of the car and touch it. And there were three cows inside the fence, and again, they were so close to the driveway that I could reach out and almost touch them. I was completely in awe of how beautiful it was. It really looked like a perfect cottage in the woods. My friend was confused, but I vividly remember looking over at her and saying, "I really want to get out and pet those cows. They're so close." Obviously, I decided not to because I was on somebody's property and I didn't want to make anyone upset. So we ended up leaving and just typing in the address of a different restaurant that I knew of that was close to the one we wanted to go to. I remember this day so vividly because we ate at this restaurant and my friend immediately got really sick from the food there and had to go home. So fast forward a little while later and I'm hanging out with two other different friends. And again, we're just broke teenagers, so we have nothing to do. I tell them about the house and the cows and how I want to go back because I really regret not petting the cows. I tell them about the house and the cows and how I really want to go back because I regret not petting the cows. I love cows. They're one of my favorite animals. I text the original friend and ask her for the exact address the map gave her to get us to that house. We went down the dirt road, down the driveway, and nothing. No little blue house. No fence, no cows, no pasture behind it, nothing. Just a circle driveway with trees on either side. It was literally just a dead-end road with a turnaround point at the end. My friends were all confused and of course thought I was crazy, but we laughed it off. I, of course, was flabbergasted. I tried to tell them that it was here just a week ago, but again they laughed and told me we were probably at the wrong place. I was like, "No, everything else is right. The house is just gone." We ended up just going back to my house and they forgot all about it, but I think about it all the time. Now, at this point, I do have to say that when I'm reviewing stories on this show, there's no way for me to 100% verify that everybody is telling their story truthfully. It's always possible that people lie in their stories. People make up stories just for clout or for some other reason. This particular story doesn't stand a chance of gaining a lot of clout, and yet I did find it peculiar that the teller of the story, in the first place, didn't want to get out to pet the cows, but then all of a sudden a week later did want to go back and pet the cows. And at first I was like, this person's having a laugh. This person is making up this story. But then I started to think about it from another perspective. A lot of people are very manipulable. And one of the common traits of these phantom houses and these phantom locations in the forest is that they prey upon manipulable people. People who have weak minds are often enticed and trapped in these locations. And in those moments, these people report lost time. And so it occurred to me as I was going over this story, trying to figure out if I should even share it because perhaps this person is just BSing, that this may also be a case of somebody who is completely overtaken with this obsession for this specific location. And that is something that is mimicked in many of these stories. People become entranced. People cannot stop thinking about these phantom locations. People become magically drawn to them, it seems. And like I said before I started the story, oftentimes other people don't experience those locations in the same way, or they don't even remember those locations. So that's kind of why I chose to share that particular story, because it does showcase a number of common traits among those who experience these phantom houses and these phantom entities like the cows in the woods. So whether or not the story is true is going to be up for, you know, debate forever, I guess. And I'm by no means the type of person who says that your story is false just because it's weird. But I do want to make sure that everybody knows that just because you hear something doesn't mean it's true. But just because you hear something and it's weird doesn't necessarily mean that it's not true either. There's a lot of weird stories out there. And we've got a few more coming in this episode. But I just wanted to clear that up before we keep going. And we're going to go back in time a little bit, back to the 1800s. It's interesting that these types of stories start popping up frequently in the 1800s in North America. And I don't know if that has something to do with the colonization of America or what it really has to do with. Surprisingly, this is not a new or solely modern experience among woodland explorers. There's this book, The History of the Ottawa and Chippewa Indians of Michigan and Grammar of Their Language, written by A.J. Blackbird, which was written sometime in the 1800s and is a bit of a personal journey. It's kind of a diary while at the same time being a history book, as many of these Native American history books are. And it was originally written in the native tongue of these tribes, but on two pages of this long book, multiple hundreds of pages, there's two pages that tell a bizarre story that just stuck out of the entire book like a sore thumb. The story goes, "My father's favorite winter quarters were somewhere above Big Rapids on Muskegon River. He hunted and trapped there all winter and made sugar. A very mysterious event happened to my brother William while my folks were making sugar there. One beautiful morning, after the snow had entirely disappeared in the woods, my brother William, then at the age of about 8 or 9 years, was shooting around with his little bow and arrows among the sugar trees. But that day, he never came home. At sundown, our parents were beginning to feel very uneasy about their little boy, and yet they thought he must have gone to some neighboring sugar bush, as there were quite a number of families also making sugar in the vicinity. Early in the morning, my father went to all the neighboring sugar camps, but William was nowhere to be found, so at once a search was instituted. Men 34 and boys were out in search for the boy, calling and shooting their guns far and near. But not a trace of him anywhere could be found. Our parents were almost distracted with anxiety and fear about their boy, and they continued the search 3 days in vain. On the fourth day, one of our cousins, whose name was Ogimawanene, came to a very deep gully between two hills. He went up to the top of the highest hill in order to be heard a long distance. And when he reached the top, he began to halloo as loud as he could, calling the name of the child. Peteane quat! At the end of his shouting, he thought he heard someone responding to his call. Wow? This word is one of the interrogatives in the Indian language and is equivalent to what in the English language. He listened a few minutes and again he called as before and again heard distinctly the same response. Wow? It came from above, right over his head, and as he looked upward, he saw the boy, almost at the top of the tree, standing on a small limb in a very dangerous situation, and he said, "Hello, what are you doing up there? Can't you come down?" "Yes, I can," was the answer. "I came up here to find out where I am and which way is our sugar camp." "Come down then. I will show you which way is your home." After he came down from the tree, our cousin offered him food, but the child would not touch a morsel, saying that he was not hungry, as he had eaten only a little while ago. "Ah, you've been fed then. Who fed you? We have been looking for you for days now, well over 3 days." The boy replied, "I had everything that I wanted to eat in the great festival of the Wametogozewag, which is the white people." "Where are they now?" asked our cousin. "That is just what I would like to know too," said the boy. "I had just come out of their nice house between the two hills, and as I looked back after I came out of their door, I saw no more of their house, and heard no more of them nor their music." Our cousin again questioned the boy, "How did you come to find these Wametogozewag here?" And little William replied, "They came to our sugar camp and invited me to go with them, but I thought it was very close by. I thought we walked only just a few steps to come to their door." Our cousin believed it was some supernatural event and hastened to take the boy to his anxious parents again. And again, little William told the same story when interrogated by any person, and it is firmly believed by all of our family and friends that he was cherished and fed 3 days in succession by angelic beings. You know, we're only capable of perceiving a small slice of the light spectrum because our perception is so limited, we don't see everything that is around us 24/7. On top of that, we experience time and space in a specific three-dimensional way. When you factor in ideas like layers of reality, multiple timelines, parallel universes, past, present, and future, potentially coexisting, it makes you wonder what else might be around us that we simply cannot perceive. Many traditions talk about interdimensional beings. They talk about elementals and fairies, and all these beings existing alongside us all the time, just outside of our sensory range. Kind of like how cats clearly see something that we don't when they're looking around the room and they're being all creepy and we're like, what is he looking at? In the Philippines, there is a story of a creature, the Nuno Sapunso, and literally speaking, this means goblin of the mound. They're goblins or elves who basically live in mysterious lumps of soil or anthills called punso. And their actual size is often disputed. Some claim they're invisible to the human eye. Some say the size of a small insect, and others say that they're up to 3 feet tall and stand like a toddler. But their appearance is said to resemble that of an old man. Small, bearded, typically brown skin, and they wear a loincloth a lot of the time and a woven hat and walk barefoot. Nunos are usually related to duende, which you might have heard me talk about before, which are a South American goblin. However, they are a little bit different. Duende is a a type of goblin who shows himself to children and tends to be playful and mischievous, sometimes evil, and messes with your house and stuff like that. While Nuño is a temperamental goblin, easily angered, and will inflict a whole slew of terrible vengeance to those who damage or disturb his mound. But in some cases, they inflict harsh punishments to those who offend them, and they do this by attacking that offender's body. They'll cause their body to swell up. They'll cause them to get sick, to vomit blood, to urinate black liquid. They'll cause excessive hair growth on the back. Some people have stories of these Nuño feeding people black rice, and if they eat the black rice, you will be stuck in the dimension of the Nuño forever, never to be seen again. Or if you are just in a sort of comatose state after eating the rice, it requires a special shaman to come and rescue you from this condition. If the trespasser is within range, a Nuño can spit at them, and the effects of the curse are localized to where the spit lands on the human body. That might be the body part that swells up or gets blights or something like that.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The worst punishment that one of these Nuños can enact is a possession that is kind of akin to a demonic possession. Okay? And I'm not saying that the Nuño sa punso is the answer to all of these mysteries. But it's intriguing how many people report becoming ill while experiencing a phantom house, and how there are many other stories that indicate that these houses are sort of brought about by a being, not necessarily just like a window in dimensions. And it really kind of depends on where exactly in the world these stories are coming from. Obviously, this is from the Philippines, the Nuño sa punso. But in other parts of the world, it's a witch. In the Native American story that I just read, they're angelic beings. In the Finnish story that I opened with, it was some kind of gnome. So we've got all these different creatures that may actually be more connected than we realized, but because of all the different cultures, they have different words for what these entities are. This happened a few weeks back, and I haven't been able to stop thinking about it since. My buddy lives in a rural Welsh village, one with a population of what I assume to be less than 100. Houses are fairly spread apart, and it's around 3 to 4 miles away from the nearest town or any other village. When I head up there to stay with him, we enjoy going on nighttime walks along the country lanes, since it's really quiet and there are barely any cars out after 10 p.m. And this particular night was no different. I feel the need to include that his house is connected to an old chapel, and he's responsible for cleaning it and looking after it. And beforehand, we had been messing around in this chapel, throwing footballs around and having a laugh, and I feel like this is relevant to the story. But we didn't really think anything of it, and less than half an hour later, we headed out to go on a walk. It was me, my buddy Lucas, and our other friend Reese. Now, Lucas knows these roads like the back of his hand. He's lived there practically his whole life, and has walked this particular route that we headed along more times than he can count. We were walking and ended up just about a mile away from the nearest village, where an old abandoned hotel used to be. The building's been knocked down by now, but there are fences blocking where it used to be. And this didn't creep us out much, but what happened next did. Lucas pointed through a thick layer of trees at what seemed to be a house, with no lights on at all. And despite walking this way many times before, he had never seen the house. He insisted that the architecture was a lot different to the houses that we usually saw around this area, sort of European or Germanic, as he claimed. His family is German. He wanted to get a closer look, but the house was blocked off by a construction fence as well, which we thought was really weird. I shone my phone light through the fence and we got a quick glimpse of the actual building, but then came a strange feeling of dread, and we all got this feeling at the same time. It was eerily quiet. There was no wind, no bugs, nothing. None of the usual night sounds that you would expect. So now we were feeling incredibly uncomfortable, and we continued along the trail a little further away from the house. Nearby was a wall blocking off a field, and we sat on the wall to kind of comprehend and discuss what had just happened. Across the field, about a mile off, maybe less, was the village's church. While we were trying to laugh the situation off and cover our uncomfortable feelings with jokes, the ring of a single church bell rang out from across the field. Just one ring. But this time it must have been around 11:30 p.m., so it wouldn't have made much sense for the church bell to be ringing, and even so, it only rang one time, which wouldn't have made any sense either. We all kind of looked at each other, and Reese insisted that she felt like we shouldn't have been there, speaking pretty much what we were all thinking. Me and Lucas agreed, and we quickly continued on to the path and through a wooded area. The walk back to Lucas's place was long and grueling, and the feeling of dread did not help at all. We didn't speak about the experience the whole way back until we felt safe enough to. Lucas was hung up on the fact that he had never seen that house before and had never felt that uncomfortable in this particular area before, despite doing this nighttime walk countless times. So we searched around the area on a live satellite system and discovered that where the house should have been, there was nothing but a patch of dirt and some shrubbery. The whole situation seemed completely effed to us. Everything just felt wrong. The house, the church bell, even the feeling that we got while just simply being in the area, the feeling of not being welcomed. Reese did a quick search online about ley lines and if any of them crossed each other in the area. Ley lines are prehistoric lines that run across the UK, and some believe them to be hotspots of paranormal activity. And much to our horror, we discovered that where we were sitting on that wall, two ley lines crossed each other. To us, that explained why we must have felt so uncomfortable, like maybe we weren't welcomed. We decided to go back the next day, and in the daylight, discovered that the house was not there. The three of us were completely sure that we had seen a building. Lucas going as far as to say that he could tell the architectural structure of the house was different. Even in the comfort of the daylight, the area felt wrong. It sounded insane, I know, but it's just been itching my brain for the past few weeks, and I needed to tell someone about it. Because my family, they don't believe me. Lucas and Reese's families don't believe them. I'm hoping that by getting this story out there, that someone might have an explanation as of why this house was there and then suddenly wasn't. Maybe an explanation as of why we felt so scared and dreading what would happen if we stayed in the area too long. I can't help but think it had something to do with us messing around in the chapel, but maybe that's completely insane. This whole situation doesn't sit right with me. Please, if you can, provide an explanation, because it's driving me crazy. So we have yet another story of three people who experienced the same thing. Three people who have this shared hallucination or this shared vision of something completely unexplainable. We have architectural differences. We have the church bell ringing. We have all of these landmarks in the story that are completely bizarre. We even get a glimpse of the feeling of Oz, that feeling of dread that comes over you that science explains as the feeling that you get when you're being stalked by a predator, nothing more. All of this is very, very fascinating considering that the next day they go to this same spot and what they had seen the night before is no longer there. It's especially interesting to me when people experience entities, individuals of a human-like or animal-like nature, but are of a spiritual nature, it would seem, living in these houses or on the land around them. In some cases, these individuals living in or around these homes, these entities, they don't look exactly like we do. They appear from a different time frame. They have different clothes on. They have different types of features. They have things that indicate that they're from another time or space. And that, regardless, they appear to live completely separate lives apart from ours. Completely separate lives in a completely separate world. And it makes me wonder about the concept of time echoes. These little pockets of time that get stuck. And somehow there's a crack in the fabric of time-space or something that you can get a glimpse through and see this other life and this other world that is going on just as yours is, but adjacent in a different dimension or something like that. So are these pockets of time that violate the laws of time-space, the very fabric of reality as we know it? Or can all of this just be chalked up to apparitions, shared hallucinations, illusions that multiple people experience at the same time? I've got a story that talks about these entities. In 1974, when I was 11, my friend and I were walking back home from the River Waveney near Barnby in Suffolk, UK. We lived in Barnby, which is a small rural village, and this area is countryside, and there were very few people around. We took a shortcut on a bridle path next to the railway line. In a clearing next to the rail line, we saw smoke coming out of a chimney, and we both said, "Is that a bonfire ahead?" And then we kept walking. As we approached, we saw a white, wooden, Victorian-looking house with a smoking chimney. Two children playing, a boy and a girl, also an older woman on the porch. The woman and the girl were wearing long Victorian-style dress, and there was a man in a cloth cap chopping wood on the ground around 5 meters in front of the property. We leant on the wooden fence and observed the family in the house for what seemed like a few minutes. I clearly remember saying and agreeing that nobody lives here. I've never seen this house before, even though I had used the bridle path before. The children saw us and started to come toward us, but the man chopping wood said, "No, keep away," to his children. And I remember the woman at this point looking at us also. The man then walked toward us holding the axe, but not in necessarily an aggressive manner, and he said, "Go away." And we became frightened and ran back the way we came, avoiding the woods. Terrified nonetheless, we looked back and could not see the house or the smoke anymore. We ran about a mile to the village shop and told the lady who ran it, and she said that nobody lives next to that rail line except the railway cottage. But that was not in the clearing, and it was some ways away from our sighting or experience. We knew what she was talking about and knew that it couldn't be what we were talking about. We told our parents, and they didn't believe us either. As time passed, and as we weren't believed, we just avoided the bridle path altogether. But we both know what we saw. 51 years has passed, and this still sticks in my mind. There you go. Believe it or not. Why would I bother to make this up? The thing that strikes me most interesting about this story is the fact that it appeared the storyteller and her friend had the ability to disrupt what they were seeing. It seemed like what was going on in this vision, in this pocket of a different dimension or a different time, that the children of that other time didn't seem to know the consequences of perhaps breaching that gap and coming into our space or our time, the storyteller's world. But the father in that other realm did. The father warned his children not to approach the storyteller, who appeared to be witnessing something that maybe they shouldn't have been witnessing. The children, however, of this other realm seemed unaware of those consequences. It makes you wonder if there really is a parallel dimension or something like that, where the individuals, the entities on that side, know more about us than we know about them. And that is why the father and the mother are able to caution their young not to get too close to us. Don't interact with them. But the children have not yet learned the consequences of interacting with us. And we don't really have control over when we're interacting with them, over when we will be given an opportunity to allegedly interact with them. It's kind of like fire in this other area, in this other realm, in this other dimension that you can glimpse through the window. It appears as if the children of this other realm, the young of this other realm, they haven't learned how dangerous it is to get too close. It's something that is learned over time, just as we learn things in this realm. A child needs to learn that fire is hot. And typically they need to learn this by getting burned. They learn the thresholds of heat that their body can handle before they begin to blister and burn. In this other realm, it appears that that is the situation in regards to us, just by this story alone, which is fascinating. There have been many missing 411 or just missing person cases in general, I guess, discussed by the legendary Mr. Ballin, which I'm sure many of you guys have heard of. But there's a few that he discussed and that I was able to verify that strike me as particularly interesting. And they both involve this phantom cabin. And in one of the stories, interaction appears to have been made with the entity that lives in the cabin. And thousands of people have disappeared in national parks in North America. Some have been found dead. But
hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The testimonies of the ones that have been found alive, that have made it into the public space, that have been told, because a lot of them aren't told. A lot of these people who are found, their stories aren't really told. They're not televised. They're written about years later, but not discussed in the moment. When they try to explain what happened to them, it's often kind of bizarre. It's very weird. So we have a good laugh at their expense, and we essentially just don't take them seriously. But, and a lot of people will say, well, they ate some mystery plant in the woods, they ate a berry, they ate a mushroom, and that's sort of the blanket explanation that is thrown over all of these questions that are raised about where these visions came from, what this story means, how you had such a strange experience, what you actually must have gone through. It's always kind of attributed to the mental conditions changing because of a scary situation, the situation of being lost in the woods, or it's because you ate something you shouldn't have. But I've been out in the woods a lot, okay? I spend a lot of time in the woods. I know it looks like I only live in this room, but I spend a lot of time in the woods. And I spend a lot of time days in a row in the woods, and I spend a lot of time days in a row alone in the woods. And I'm never tempted to eat plants. There's a pretty, like, it's a pretty it's pretty universal that you don't just eat random plants. You don't just consume random berries and mushrooms and things in the woods. And I don't know if this is just because maybe I am more educated in the outdoors than some of these people who get lost, but I've never been tempted to even do that because of this warning. So it seems strange to me that people use that as a sort of explanation for all of these hallucinations and strange sightings and experiences, when it's almost just as unnatural for people to wander into the woods and just start eating random plants. So maybe we should consider these stories, especially considering how so many appear to corroborate each other, these bizarre stories, a lot of them have things in common with one another, and we should start investigating the possibility that these people are actually victims of some sort of supernatural, maybe trans-dimensional luring, okay? This is a luring that kind of draws them away from their familiar place, whether it's a picnic table, a campsite, their home, the trail, their family, whatever it is. It lures them away. And in the process of this luring, it radically alters their state of consciousness. They go through a mental and spiritual change. And I don't know if they enter another dimension. I don't know what it is. Nobody really seems to. But they go somewhere else, at a minimum, mentally. And oftentimes, it appears visually it's a different place. And spiritually, they have some sort of changing as well. There's this one case that I'm sure, I don't know where I heard this case, but I'm sure a lot of you have heard it too because it's pretty popular and that's how I heard it. But there was this boy who got lost and he allegedly stayed in a huge cave with robots. And he said that even his grandmother was there. But he said that he's not sure if it was my grandmother. She might have been a robot too, who just kind of looked like my grandmother. And he talks about how she had like red eyes or something like that, if I remember correctly, but distinctly robot. This is one of those stories where an individual interacted with the entities of this other realm. It's quite obvious that many of these returnees are traumatized by some outlandish experience. In July 1983, there was an 8-year-old boy named Michael Real who went for a long hike on the Appalachian Trail with his mother and his four sisters. It was close to Roan Mountain on the border between Carolina and Tennessee. He asked his mom, "Can I go get the water from the well?" And his mom said, "Yeah, go ahead, it's okay." So she watched him take a jerry can and walk the short distance to the well until he disappeared around a bend. And she waited, and she waited. 15 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute. No sign of Michael. So she went to look for him, but she could not find him. Michael had apparently vanished into thin air. So, as you do when your child vanishes, his mother contacted the authorities. And the sheriff came, and all the police got involved, but they found nothing. Park rangers joined in on the search. Nothing. Ultimately, the army got involved with hundreds of soldiers, some allegedly special forces coming from Fort Bragg. There was a military... Ultimately, the army got involved, hundreds of soldiers, some allegedly special forces and helicopters. They all got involved, but they did not find Michael. The search went on for 7 days with no sign until suddenly, inside a blackberry thicket, there was Michael. And he wasn't hungry, and it looked like his hair had been washed. So, naturally, they were like, "What the hell happened, Michael?" And He had a very strange answer. His answer was, I just got to this cabin in the woods and there was someone there. And he looked like my granddad. But that can't be because granddad is dead. Very bizarre. And the authorities thought this was bizarre as well because there was no such cabin in the entire vicinity. They had been searching with dogs, with helicopters, police, rangers, special forces, allegedly, soldiers at a minimum, but nobody, not one single person who had lived in the vicinity or helped in the search was able to give any hint as to where or this cabin was or what Michael was even talking about because there simply was no cabin. So where had Michael been all that time? And if there was no cabin, why didn't he suffer some kind of hypothermia or hunger or injury? But there's a part two to this strange mystery. On July 17th in 1983, 8 days after Michael had been found, 20-year-old Larry Davenport decided to take a hike with his friends in the same location. And there were picnic tables in the area. So they kind of sat down, they started eating, they had a good time. Until Larry just suddenly took off his shirt, took off his shoes, and started wandering off toward the woods. His friends just kind of watched him, thinking that he was maybe going to take a piss or something. I guess nobody got up to stop him after seeing him nearly completely undress. And regardless, Larry just kept on walking. They started calling for him to come back, and he was ignoring them. He kept on going in a straight line until he reached the tree line and then disappeared into the forest. At this point, his friends did get up and run after him, but he had, just like Michael, appeared to have vanished into thin air. Again, the authorities got involved. Allegedly, the military didn't join in this case, but there were hundreds of people involved in the search for Larry Davenport, and it turned up nothing. 3 days passed, and the sheriff's department got a call, and the person on the other line said, you know, we're on a hike near Roan Mountain, but there's this strange guy who is walking around with a bedsheet wrapped around him or something. It doesn't appear to be threatening or violent, but you might want to come take a look. And so the sheriff shows up, he goes to the area, and who is it? It's Larry Davenport. The sheriff said that he did look shaken, he looked confused, and it looked like he was suffering from some sort of mental collapse. And he said, the sheriff at the time said, it looked like something that I've seen in people who were on drugs. So Larry was taken to the hospital, and fortunately, his condition did get better to the point where they began to question him. And they asked him, what the hell happened, Larry? And Larry didn't seem to remember having taken his shirt and his shoes off and walking away, but he did remember finding a cabin. And he said he entered what he thought must be the same cabin that Michael entered. And he found and tore a curtain off the rails to clothe himself in. Larry reported that there was no other person in the cabin that he knew about. There was certainly nobody in there with him. But again, everybody who knew the area was pretty certain that there was no such cabin. So where did Larry go? I've come to the conclusion that after reading all these stories, after doing a lot of research on this, after considering the human-like non-humans that appear in the woods to people, there is some kind of either a trans-dimensional bridge, a series of windows that are able to be glimpsed through. There is some kind of entry to another mental state or spiritual condition. There is something about the forest in general that appears to, I hate the phrase, but it's an okay phrase to get an understanding. But there's something about the forest that appears to thin the veil. in some way. All of these stories that people have, either everybody is making this stuff up, or some of it is actually real. And the reason that I like to include stories from all these different people across all these different times is to show that they're not single isolated incidents that only relate to a specific place or time in history. When it comes to children, a lot of people say that children are more spiritually sensitive than adults. And this is often because they are closer to a state of non-existence than adults. And so there's something that bleeds into them, that bleeds into their spiritual aliveness, if you will. Thanks for watching. The life is in the blood.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.